Hello and welcome to our program, Money Matters, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Deb Parsons, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from various sources here on OWL Radio. Starting out today is an article on NPR News titled, "The Fed Raises Interest Rates Again Despite the Stress Hitting the Banking System." The Federal Reserve raised interest rates for the ninth time in a row on Wednesday, opting to continue its campaign against high inflation despite stress in the banking industry following the collapse of two regional banks. Fed policymakers voted unanimously to raise their benchmark interest rate by a quarter percentage point to just under 5%, which will make it more expensive for people seeking car loans or carrying a balance on their credit cards. Members of the Fed's rate-setting committee said additional rate hikes may be necessary to restore price stability. On average, policymakers anticipate rates climbing by another quarter percentage point by the end of this year, according to new projections that were also released on Wednesday. The committee anticipates that some additional policy firming may be appropriate, the Fed said in a statement. Some observers had urged the central bank to pause its rate hikes, at least temporarily, in order to assess the fallout from the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank earlier this month. Stress in the banking system appeared to ease in recent days. However, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said Tuesday that large withdrawals from regional banks have stabilized and bank stocks have rallied this week. The U.S. banking system is sound and resilient, the Fed's monetary policy statement said. Meanwhile, consumer prices continue to climb at a rapid rate. Annual inflation in February was 6%, down from 9.1% last June, but still well above the Fed's target of 2%. The central bank is particularly concerned about the rising cost of services, such as airline tickets and streaming TV subscriptions. To restore price stability, we'll need to see lower inflation in this sector, Fed Chairman Jerome Powell told a Senate panel earlier this month. The Fed is under pressure over bank collapses. The Fed is also facing scrutiny for its oversight of the two failed banks. Fed supervisors reportedly identified problems with Silicon Valley's bank risk management practices years ago, but the problems were not corrected, and the California lender had to be taken over by the U.S. government after suffering a massive bank run. We need to have humility and conduct a careful and thorough review of how we supervised and regulated this firm, said Michael Barr, the Fed's vice chairman for supervision. Barr is conducting that review and has promised a report by May 1st. He'll also testify before two congressional committees next week. Others have called for an independent probe of the Fed's role in the bank failures. Senators Elizabeth Warren, Democrat from Massachusetts, and Rick Scott, Republican from Florida, have also proposed replacing the Fed's internal inspector general with an outside inspector appointed by the president. Recession fears have grown over banking turmoil. The Fed will need to weigh the impact of the collapse of the two regional lenders in deciding how much to raise interest rates going forward. Since the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank, other banks are expected to be more conservative about making loans. Recent developments are likely to result in tighter credit conditions for households and businesses and to weigh on economic activity, hiring, and inflation, the Fed statement said. The extent of these effects is uncertain. Tighter credit conditions, like rising interest rates, lead to slower economic growth. Credit is the grease that makes small businesses' wheels run and make the overall economy run, said Kathy Bostjanik, chief economist at Nationwide. If that credit starts to get choked off, she said, you're going to have a pretty big, I would expect, pullback. That could provide an assist for the Fed in curbing inflation, but it also raises the risk of tipping the economy into recession. Still, Fed policymakers aren't expecting a recession. On average, members of the rate-setting committee expect the economy to grow 0.4% this year, according to its projections on Wednesday. They expect the unemployment rate to climb to 4.5% from 3.6% in January. Next up, also from NPR News, could the banking turmoil affect you? Five ways it might. The news about bank collapses and emergency rescues can seem both alarming and distant. Maybe you wondered, is my bank account safe? If it's under $250,000, your money is fully insured by federal authorities under all circumstances. So you might ask, why do I care about the natty problems of the banking world? It's a reasonable question. There are possible consequences for the U.S. economy, small business, and regular people. Here are some of them. Will this trigger a recession? That depends on many factors. Will banks get more cautious about lending? This would mean less access to money for real estate development, business expansions, purchases of homes and cars. Experts at Goldman Sachs say that smaller banks in particular may tighten up, resulting in slower economic growth for the nation as a whole. People who control budgets of families and businesses hold sway too. Will employers get leery about hiring new workers? Will shoppers cool their travel plans or delay big purchases? These expenditures are key pillars of the U.S. economy, and a big scale back would bite. And what happens to the banking system? Experts point to a handful of regional banks that took similar risks to the failed lenders and could be in danger. The Federal Reserve is offering funding to help shore up banks' cash reserves and avoid another damaging bank run. But the Fed is also expected to raise interest rates in its long-term quest to fight inflation. Will getting a loan become even more expensive? Possibly, and it's a similar explanation. On Wednesday, the Federal Reserve did raise interest rates. Interest rates, which guide how much people and businesses pay for various loans, have already been rising for over a year. Now, the question is whether banks may also get more conservative and reduce how many loans they issue. They may decide this because of general belt tightening in an uncertain economy, or if they face tougher regulations and the fallout of recent bank failures. Will the federal rescue trickle down to higher fees for regular bank customers? Here's the context. To prevent wider panic, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation broke with normal policy to guarantee that all customers could get their money back from the collapsed SVP and Signature Bank. The call was remarkable because over 90% of SVP's and nearly 90% of Signature's deposits exceeded the $250,000 cap for FDIC insurance. That insurance money may come from a fund pooled through quarterly fees from FDIC-insured banks. With billions of this rainy day fund now spent, how will it get replenished? That depends on how successful the FDIC will be in selling the failed bank's assets. It also depends on the steadiness of the banking system. A cascade of similar insurance payouts could mean the FDIC might assess higher fees on banks, who could then pass on the new costs to all of their customers. Could this make big banks even more powerful? Emotions and perceptions can be powerful drivers, and the government's swift financial rescue may create the unintended perception that, in an emergency, customers at big enough banks will get bailed out no matter what, whether their deposits are insured or not. That can mean bankers who manage uninsured accounts above the $250,000 cap may start taking greater risks, or the people who own these accounts may scrutinize their bankers' decisions less. Another worry is a potential exodus from smaller regional banks to bigger ones, based on that perception of less risk, even though there's no indication that small banks are in trouble. This could force smaller banks to close or get absorbed into bigger institutions, possibly leaving fewer lenders commanding more clout. Does this mean a new era of less Silicon Valley innovation? Before its collapse, Silicon Valley Bank was a key player in the startup ecosystem, facilitating meetings of entrepreneurs and venture capital investors in addition to holding their accounts and loans. It did business with nearly half of U.S. tech startups, including those doing biomedical research. It removes a capital source for many companies, and it also means that some companies may end up failing. Bob Chess, chairman of Nektar Therapeutics, told KQED's Leslie McClurg. The failures of SVP and New York Signature Bank, which was big on cryptocurrencies as well as tech, may lead to a slowdown in lending to smaller, untested business ventures or a slowdown in Silicon Valley's startup spending overall. From USA Today, this article is titled, "What is Inflation? Understanding Why Prices Rise, What Causes It, and who it hurts the most. Inflation is hovering near a 40-year high, driven by steep increases in food prices, housing, and utilities. The Federal Reserve is trying to bring it down by aggressively raising interest rates, even if it pushes the economy closer to a recession. Still, prices are soaring, making it harder for many Americans to get by. The Consumer Price Index, or CPI report, published on Tuesday and provided key information on the prices of various consumer goods and services and how much they have risen over the past month and year. The data also gave an idea of whether inflation is beginning to cool. While it is easy to see and measure these price changes, it's something else to actually understand them. Inflation can impact many things besides costs, such as employment and wages. So, what is inflation and what causes it? What is inflation? Inflation is a generalized rise in prices, says Josh Bivens, the director of research at the Economic Policy Institute, a left-leaning think tank based in Washington, D.C. For example, goods like gas, rent, or food can be impacted by inflation. Inflation, though, really is meant to only refer to all goods and services together rising in price by some common amount, he explained. What causes inflation? Inflation can be caused by several factors. The most common is a macroeconomic excess of spending over the economy's relative ability to produce goods and services, Bivens said. In this instance, more people are spending money on goods or services that are not readily available to meet those demands, so producers begin to raise prices. If everyone in the economy tomorrow decided they weren't going to save any money from their paychecks and they're just going to spend every last dollar out of the blue, they would all run to the store and buy things, Bivens said. But producers haven't produced enough to accommodate that big surge of across-the-board spending, so you would see prices bid up. Another cause of inflation is a lack of producers. If there are not enough workers to produce the demanded good or service, this would lead to an increase in prices as well, Bivens said. Labor is the primary component of cost of producing anything, he explained. There is also a level of built-in inflation within economies where systems try to get inflation to revolve around a steady percent. In the U.S., the Federal Reserve System's target inflation is 2%. This means businesses can increase prices by 2% each year, and the market will still be competitive. Workers can also ask for a 2% wage raise based on these increases so that they can still afford goods and services. That 2% is a kind of the built-in inflation, what everybody expects to happen, Bivens said. What does CPI stand for? CPI stands for the Consumer Price Index. It is a metric used by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics to gauge how much the price of consumer goods and services has changed over time. It can effectively measure inflation in an urban market and give government officials and everyday citizens alike an idea of the health of the overall economy. The most recent CPI report, released on February 14, 2023, indicated that the Consumer Price Index for All Urban Consumers, CPIU, rose 0.5% in January on a seasonally adjusted basis. Over the last year, the All Items Index increased 6.4% before seasonal adjustment. The index for shelter, meaning the cost of housing, was by far the largest contributor to the CPI increase. That means Americans are paying more on rent and mortgages. Food, gasoline, and natural gas were also contributors. How is inflation measured? In the most basic sense, inflation is measured by comparing the current price of goods and services against their recent history. This is done by looking at a number of government-released data reports. The CPI is the most prominent of these metrics. Released by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, the Consumer Price Index measures the prices of goods in an urban market, which represents over 90% of the American public. The CPI looks at a fixed basket of some 80,000 goods and services to come up with these numbers. What gets put in that basket depends on the Consumer Expenditures Survey, which polls Americans to determine which goods are important. The importance of these goods then determines their weight in the CPI. For example, the price of something like gasoline, which forms an integral part of many people's cost of living, will contribute more than other items. The CPI does not have just one version, though. Another version, the Chain Consumer Price Index for all urban customers, is used to adjust tax brackets. The virtue of the chain CPI is that it takes into account the substitution of similar items, which happens often when prices go up amid inflation. In doing this, it provides a more accurate look at consumer spending and doesn't overstate inflation. Inflation can also be measured through the Price Index for Personal Consumption Expenditures, PCE. This metric, released by the Bureau of Economic Analysis, takes a more holistic view. Rather than calculating the change in prices for goods paid solely out of pocket for consumers, the PCE takes into account all expenses, including healthcare coverage compensated by insurance. The PCE is what the Fed uses as its gold standard measure of inflation. The Fed has a 2% inflation target. The final piece of the puzzle to factor in is core inflation. This is a term used by economists to reflect the rate of inflation, excluding prices for food and energy, which are notoriously variable. Is inflation good or bad? Inflation is both good and bad, Riven said. The inflation we have today in 2022 is just bad. It's too high, it's too fast, he said. However, if rates of inflation are consistent, positive, and low, they can be beneficial, he added. Inflation is sort of greasing the wheels of the labor market, Viven said. It is a way to do some adjustments without actually having to cut nominal wages, and the economy just seems to operate better like that. If inflation goes beyond its target percentage, though, it can cause uncertainty within the market. Whatever your target is, you don't want to go really far above that. You want people to be able to make plans and have a predictable sense of how much prices and wages will rise over the next year, Viven said. Who is hurt by inflation? Inflation and recession are strongly related, said Bivens. A big rise in the unemployment rate is going to put a lot of downward pressure on inflation, he said. As the economy slows, inflationary pressures tend to relent. A recession isn't determined by a negative quarter of gross domestic product, or even two for that matter. Rather, it's a significant decline in economic activity resulting from several factors, including high unemployment, a slowdown of goods produced and sold, and wages falling in addition to negative GDP readings. That's according to the National Bureau of Economic Research, which gives the final ruling on when a U.S. recession starts and ends. So, inflation could produce a recession, but it is not a definite outcome. How is inflation changing holiday deals and shopping? According to the National Retail Federation, the largest retail trade group, holiday sales growth will slow down to around 6-8% this year, in comparison to the 13.5% growth of a year ago. However, the average discount rate in the U.S. across all categories online went up to 31% on Thanksgiving, slower than last year's 27%, according to Salesforce data. Additionally, shoppers spent $5.3 billion online on Thanksgiving Day, up 2.9% from the holiday last year, according to Adobe Analytics, which monitors spending across websites. Despite this, Adobe Analytics expects online sales to be 2.5% from November 1st through December 31st, a slowdown from last year's 8.6% pace. Why are people taking side hustles? With inflation surging, more Americans are or are considering taking on extra work to afford holiday purchases along with everyday necessities. More than 4 out of 5 Americans who currently have or plan to take on a side gig, seasonal job, or extra hours at work say inflation played a role in their decision, according to a Naver.com survey of 1,000 people taken on October 30th. Additionally, 44% of Americans currently work or plan to work a seasonal job, like shipping packages for Amazon or stocking and unloading for Walmart. And 51% either currently work or plan to work overtime at their current 9-to-5 job, the survey said. Are food prices going to keep going up? Grocery prices rose by 0.7% from August and are up 13% over the past 12 months. Barclays expects double-digit annual food inflation through January. In September, the price of rice rose 1% from the previous month and 13.6% from a year earlier. Cakes, cupcakes, and cookies jumped 1.8% and are up 16% annually. Pork climbed 1.8% and 6.7% from a year ago. However, some food prices dipped. Uncooked ground beef fell 2% and eggs fell 3.5%, although they are still up 30.5% yearly. Are imported coffee prices rising? Over the last 2 years, coffee prices have steadily increased. According to NASDAQ, the price of coffee reached a high of around $2.50 a pound in February 2022. The last recorded high price was in October 2014 at approximately $2.21 per pound. Weather conditions have impacted the production of coffee, especially in Colombia, where heavy rains caused complications for crop growth. From February 2021 to January 2022, coffee production in Colombia fell by 11%. In August 2022, Arabica coffee was being traded at a price of $2.43 per pound. Even in American grocery stores, coffee prices jumped 14.8% throughout 2022, according to data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. However, since then, the market value of coffee has fallen. As of February, the price of coffee hovers around $1.80 per pound. How inflation affects rent. Much like other aspects of the economy, inflation can cause a rise in prices for rent as well. Rent has gone up 0.8% monthly and 7.2% over the past year as landlords responded to an earlier rise in home prices. Why are gas prices going back up? For a third month, gas prices have declined sharply based on falling global demand for oil and recession worries. Pump prices fell 4.9%, but were still up 18.2% annually and have moved higher in recent weeks after OPEC announced oil production cuts. Where is the housing market heading? According to Mortgage News Daily, the 30-year fixed mortgage rate on October 24th was 7.29%, marking the highest 30-year rate in 20 years. Meanwhile, in September, the median sales price for homes in the U.S. was $384,000, an 8.4% spike from the $355,100 price tag last year as prices climbed across the country. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell said the housing market may need a correction to make homes more affordable. What is core CPI? The Consumer Price Index, or CPI, measures the average change over time in the prices paid by consumers for a variety of different consumer goods and services, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Core prices exclude volatile food and energy items and generally provide a better measure of long-term trends. These core prices increased 0.6% from August, following a similar rise in the previous month, pushing the annual increase from 6.3% to 6.6%, a new 40-year high. From AP News, this article is titled, "More Homeowners Tap Equity Juiced by Soaring Prices." Homeowners are increasingly tapping their equity, taking advantage of big gains following years of soaring housing prices. Some 333,537 home equity loans were taken out by homeowners in the third quarter last year, according to data from TransUnion. That's about a 47% increase from the same quarter in 2021, the most home equity loans on records going back to 2010, the credit bureau said. Banks also granted some 405,646 home equity lines of credit, or HELOCs, to borrowers in the third quarter, up 40% from a year earlier. HELOCs and home equity loans continue to grow at unprecedented levels as homeowners increasingly take advantage of the record levels of tappable home equity they have built in their homes, said Joe Millman, mortgage business lender at TransUnion. The change is part of a broader uptick in the use of credit as higher prices for food, gas, and other necessities squeezes household budgets. Credit card balances climbed to a record high $931 billion in the last 3 months of 2022, a nearly 19% increase from a year earlier, TransUnion said. Unsecured personal loan balances reached a record $222 billion. Homeowners use the equity available for them, mainly to consolidate debt, finance home improvement projects, and pay for big-ticket purchases. years of rising home values have made home equity a tempting option. Tappable homeowner equity jumped 18% in the third quarter from a year earlier to an all-time high of $20.2 trillion, TransUnion said. In 2021 and 2022, when mortgage rates were near historic lows, many homeowners drew upon their big home equity gains via cash-out refinancing. But that all changed last year. A sharp rise in mortgage rates knocked the housing market into a nearly year-long slump in 2022. As rates on a 30-year home loan soared to the highest level since 2008, home sales cratered and demand for mortgage refinancing slowed to a crawl. By the end of the third quarter, refinancing was down 84% from a year earlier to a record low, TransUnion said. This overall demand to tap home equity has been around for a few years now. It's just shifting from cash-out refi into HELOCs and home equity loans, Millman said. From mysanantonio.com, locally, San Antonio residents spend nearly a quarter of their income on rent. A real estate listing website says you're spending a lot on rent. Renting a house or apartment in San Antonio is becoming more costly, according to a new report that says people are spending nearly a quarter of their income on rent. People leasing in the Alamo City used 23.4% of their income to rent a home as of February, which is up from 22.2% in February 2022, according to a report from Realtor.com. Realtor pulled the data from studio, one-bedroom, and two-bedroom units that are listed on its website. The median rent for the San Antonio area as of February is $1,346, a 5.4% increase year over year. Rent prices nationally are $296, or 20.8% higher than the same time in 2020, just before the COVID pandemic. The general rule of thumb is that you shouldn't spend more than 30% of your income on housing, says Realtor.com chief economist Danielle Hale in the report. However, a September 2022 report from Texas Housers says renters with families and a median household income of $38,550 were already spending over 30% of their income on rent. In August 2022, San Antonio was among the top 10 areas with the fastest rising rents in July, with a 21% year-over-year increase. You have been listening to Money Matters on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Deb Parsons saying goodbye from Owl Radio.